Westies informs me they live for one day.
Yeah, and their whole purpose is to find a mate. So don't kill it. Give it a chance.
I will try and give this one a chance, though. If it keeps bumbling into the microphone, I might have to take evasive measures. Like, they creep me out. They really, really creep me out, Daddy Longlegs. The last six times Reading have walked away from Turf Moor with all 3 points, the season has ended in a top six finish. So, after a 2-1 win for Steve Clark's side on Saturday, should we allow ourselves to dream of end-of-season drama? Meanwhile, those of you with wedding commitments in February can breathe easy, as our Capital One Cup dream ended in a gutsy defeat to Everton. So we look at which fringe players made an impression, and who might just have to get used to warming the bench. All that, plus a look ahead to a massive clash at the Medeski on Saturday, and plenty more in this week's Tilehurst End podcast. Hello, welcome, my name is Dan Wimbush, editor of thetilehurstend.com. And as usual, we're rotating the squad, much like Steve Clark. This week, I'm joined by regular, Mr. Alan West, otherwise known as Westy. Hello.
Hello, mate. How are you?
I'm not spare, mate. Yourself?
Very well, thank you.
And making his season debut on the podcast, Rob Langham from The Two Unfortunates. Rob, hello.
Very happy to be here again, Dan. Good to see you both.
I was meant to ask you just before we came on the air, what was the last time you came on the show? Because I can't imagine things were this good when we were talking last.
I think the only thing I can remember is that it was dark and finding the place today was a lot easier. The studio, even though it stands out, given it's such a huge building.
Secret, oh, absolutely.
The secret location.
Yeah, the crystal walls and everything we've got
but,
here.
I think it would have been in about February, March time. No, that actually I do remember now. It was after we'd beaten Bradford 3-0 in the Cup.
Yeah, that's where it rings a bell.
Yeah,
nice. Good luck charm then, by the sounds of things.
Well, our league form has certainly taken a turn for the good since then. Reading sit third in the table, gents. I ask this every week now, but is this as good as it's going to get, or is this going to get even better?
I personally think it's going to get better and better. I think every time I watch Reading now, I'm more and more confident they're going to go up. I genuinely think they're all going to get promoted. They keep playing the way they do at the moment.
I feel genuinely confident as well. I have to say, and we'll come on to this later on, I'm sure, given we're playing them next, Middlesbrough, for me, are still probably the favourites to win the league. But I'm pretty confident we can haul in Brighton. And although there are some good sides there and thereabouts in the playoff zone, I still think, yeah, I'm with Westy on this. I think we've got every chance.
It's just a squad. The sheer strength of that squad. I mean, the amount of players, and we go on to it in a minute, but the amount of players they were missing for the Burnley game, sort of top players at the start, and they've coped without them. And they beat a side that, let's face it, are one of the favourites to get promoted.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of changes, it was a much changed side for the visit of Everton in the Capital One Cup. And we'll recap that, as well as that victory at Turf Moor, just after this.
View from the Tilehurst End. Recapping this week's championship action.
Okay then, gents, so the Capital One Cup dream unfortunately is over. As I said, if you've booked your wedding for the end of February, rest easy, not like this plonker here. you are going to be absolutely fine. A bit of a letdown, really, in the fact that it was a game that we certainly dominated in the first half, only to go on to lose to a great Ross Barkley strike and an unfortunate bit of goalkeeping from Ali Alhamzi. But, well, see, I wrote in the match report coming out of this, this is one of the very few times I've ever walked out of the Medeski Stadium after a defeat feeling good. Did you have a good vibe?
Yeah, I did. I did have a good vibe. And again, the changes they've made just goes to prove how strong this squad is. And I've always said this, when you play Premier League sides, you can outplay them and you still get beat because they've got players that will score goals out of absolutely nothing. And that's what's happened in this game. And I think everyone who left the stadium on a day must have thought, you know what, looking at the players that have come in, not only have they done a job, they've been standing up to a top Premier League side.
Rob, you were there. What did you make of the performance? You know, featuring an Everton team, this was no reserve Premier League side. You know, this wasn't like the Arsenal team that pitched up and still managed to beat a 7-5. But this was, you know, a team full of, you know, Barkley had two England centre-backs in Jagielka and Stones, had Lukaku, had Kone, lot of good players. How did you rate the Reading performance?
I thought it was superb. Very, very good indeed. And I think particularly if you consider the fact that the Reading players hadn't really played together. It's the difference between having a completely changed side, which Reading fielded, and having a team where the players are allowed to play with some of the regulars. So I thought they did especially well, that it, given that almost nobody in the starting lineup had many games so far this season. So,
yeah, four full debutants amongst, I think, eight changes in all. Lucas Pearson, Ola John, Paulo Hurtado and Alex Fernandez all getting a start for the first time. Out of those four, Rob, which one stood out for you the most?
That's quite a tough question, actually, because I think their performances were all good. But I would probably just about go for John, just simply because he had that fantastic run and set up the goal for Blackman, beating Aaron Lennon, who, let's face it, is far from a slouch. Although Aaron Lennon at right back is not one.
No,
he
didn't fill me with confidence.
But I would go for him. I think he looked very lively. Initially, he looked a little bit uncertain of himself, but I think he shone a little bit more than Hurtado did on the other flank, I think.
I think it was getting used to the pace of the game. I don't think they've played in that sort of intense pace of football that you do get with Premier League and Championship games now. But what did impress me was the fact that they quickly adapted. They had sort of 20 minutes where it was getting caught a little bit, and then after that they was on flying, all of them.
Yeah, amongst the debutants as well, someone making his first senior appearance of the season anyway, at least at Medeski Stadium, Jake Cooper. I thought he started really sluggish alongside Michael Hector. He had a couple of nervy moments on the ball and a couple of dodgy clearances, but after that, it was really impressive against, as I said, an attack featuring Lukaku, you know, one of the best strikers in the Premier League. How big of a talent do you think Jake Cooper is?
I think he looks very promising on that showing. I mean, the only issue is how much is he going to play? I mean, obviously, Anton Ferdinand's injured at the moment, so I think there's only one more injury has to happen and he might be back in the team for quite a long spell. But he's probably benefiting from having people like Paul McShane around the club, really. And, you know, in training, you can understand having an experienced centre-half there would really help in bringing someone's game on. So I agree, I think it had a tremendous game, and a neutral friend of mine who went to the match picked him out as our star man. So,
The only real negative, unfortunately, Westy's come out of this game is once again we're talking about a goalkeeper. Ali Alhabsi, let's face it, a mare for the Everton winner. I mean, it's a well-struck free kick from Deulofeu, but he's got to do so much better than that.
It was a long way out, and you'd have thought, as close as he got to the ball, he should have been saving that. He looked weak when he actually got to the ball. And we keep saying about Habsi that he's got a mistake in him, but unfortunately it looks like every time he plays he's got a mistake in him, rather than the odd one in 10.
Is this someone you stick with, Rob, or is it a case of you might need to think about getting someone like Stuart Moore or even somebody else into the club?
Well, I think you stick with it for the moment, but I mean, as Westy said, I think you can afford the odd mistake, but you can't really afford a mistake every match. One of the things that people forget from 2 or 3 years ago is when Adam Federici started the season with 3 games in a row where he made mistakes, and you absolutely can't afford that, you know, because it becomes the norm. And you know, as I said, infrequent mistakes fine, but all the time, that's not really acceptable.
I think the manager pointed at them switching off during games because they're not having a lot to do. Mm. When they are, they're switching off. But again, for a player of his experience, I think that's unprofessional. He should be able to concentrate for 90 minutes.
Yeah, the talk after the game on Radio Berkshire was about this stat. And unfortunately, I forget it off the top of my head, but it's something like Reading have, what, had some like 16 shots against them and 9 goals have got in. I said I'm getting the stat wrong, but no, it's something along those lines.
It's roughly correct, yeah. And again, you'd have thought with the amount of shots they're not having a goal, we'd have had more clean sheets than we have.
Well, that's the unfortunate thing. Again, a real positive in this game is Nick Blackman, gents. And this leads us nicely into the Burnley game, really, because Nick Blackman scores a good sort of poacher's goal, really, against Everton. Obviously, it proves in vain as we lose 2-1, but then going up to Turf Moor, and he scores again. Not only that, he combines with Hal Robson-Kanu.
Yeah.
Is Satan going to be skating to work tomorrow? Because the thought of Blackman and Hal Robson-Kanu combining, I was going to say, Rob, if I'd said on your last appearance, Nick Blackman would be leading the Championship goal-scoring charts by the next time you came to this podcast, I don't think you would have taken very... In fact, you might not have even come back. Such crazy accusations.
Absolutely not. I mean, I think you said last week that he does have a tendency, and he has had in his career, to have streaks of form, but none has lasted quite as long as this.
Not at this level either.
No, absolutely not. The one player, I don't know if you guys agree with me, but the one player who's beginning to remind me of is a little bit is Dave Kitson. You know, just slightly more skillful version perhaps, but you know, just that way, he's a very confident, tall guy, real presence up front. And
he's definitely a confidence player, only Blackburn. Yeah. I think when he's down in the dumps, he puts in a performance like he's down in the dumps, whereas now he's scoring, he seems to want to get on the end of everything.
Yeah, and Kitson had that sort of bit of a swagger about him as well, because he was someone that would be a bit sulky, like we've seen with Blackman in his career, and then go on to score. And some of the goals that Blackman has scored have been as spectacular as David. I don't think Kitson was he about 23, 24 when he sort of broke into the Reading side properly?
Yeah, he probably was about that age, yeah.
He came from Cambridge, so yeah, I hadn't actually thought of that before, but that's a good one. The other, you know, we talked about him making his debut against Everton, maybe not setting the world on fire, but Lucas Pearson in for Matej Vidra. No official word on what Vidra's out with. Presumably it's injury, because he wasn't even in the squad. But the Chelsea loan, he starts, and again, bags a really well-taken goal. And Westy, I think this points to what you're saying. Look at how deep this squad is, because no Vidra, no Sarr, no Anton Ferdinand, and these players are stepping up.
Yeah, and again, if Saturday comes and you see Sarr sat on the bench, then no one would be shocked, would they? Whereas before, you'd have thought he'd be starting every week, and it'd be unfortunate for anyone to lose their place now to someone who's been out for 3 matches.
What did you make of the goal, Rob?
Oh, I mean, both goals were good, but the second one, yeah, the move was fantastic. And Pierzon, he looks a lovely player in terms of his skill. I know people, perhaps with some hyperbole, have described him as the new Kaká, because he actually looks like him as well a bit. But he does, obviously, he would be at a different level if he were able to reach those standards. But I have to say, he does look very good. I mean, he doesn't really have much pace. I think that's the one thing I'd say. But then we've got pace around him. Mm. So I think, yeah, he's adding something different to the team, actually.
But Guilfi never had massive amounts of pace. No. And he played in a similar sort of role and did very well.
You don't have to be quick if you're clever in the brain. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, and some of the moves, I mean, you know, just drifting back to the Everton game, some of the moves we were pulling off, it was great to watch. It was just, unfortunately, like you said, because they hadn't played together, it was just that final pass. I remember, I think it's a great run. There was a great run down the flank, I think possibly by Hurtado, and he just cuts it inside. No, it was Pearson with a back heel, cuts it into Hurtado, and Hurtado messes it up. Mm-hmm. And little things like that, and final balls and things like that. But there is a lot of skill. And we, with the greatest of respects, I think we said this last week, didn't we? You know, Reading last year had the likes of Jamie Mackey. Great tryers, but
not
a lot of skill. This season, they've got the whole bag. They've got battlers like Quinn. They've got the skill from people like Pearson. It's just, I almost can't believe we're sat talking about Reading Football Club, because it is such a 180. Yeah.
And you look at the bench and they're strong. And I mean, Taylor come in for this game against Everton and it was outstanding as well. Mm. Steady at left back, you know. Mm. And again, it's made Jordan Abita raise his game a little bit when Saturday come, because he knows now that he's got genuine competition for his place. Yeah. And so does everybody else.
And I've got to say, if there is a negative from the Burnley game, you know, we just watched the highlights again before we started. And I'm not convinced about Jordan Abita. He seems to be switching. Oh, well. I am convinced about Jordan Abita generally as left back, but this season he's just switched off a few too many times to my liking. There's been two or three instances now where people have ghosted in at the far post. And he's just sort of been caught ball watching or drifting.
Yeah, we were talking about, weren't we? Yeah, again, but say he, apart from that, I mean, it was obviously, when you look at the goal, it was looks like his mistake. He's lost his man, but generally in the game, I thought he had a pretty good match.
Yeah, from all absolutely, and the people in between him as well, Hector and McShane. You can see now, Rob, why Chelsea have taken that punt on Hector.
You can do, and Hector's just been excellent since he's come back in, hasn't he? And really seen that there's competition for places and is really determined. So,
Hector is a standout. He will be a brilliant footballer. I think the more he plays, the better he gets. And like I say, now he's got experienced centre-backs around him, good experienced centre-backs that have played at high level. It'll only get better and better. And I think for £4 million, I think Chelsea have got an absolute snip. At the very least, they get their money back and more if they decide to sell him. There's one thing I want to point out just before you move on. Sorry,
that's Wayne. Right.
With Simon Cox, you'd have thought he'd have got a game against Everton. You thought he'd got at least on the pitch.
Well, Clark mentioned this was basically put to him, and he said, you know, would you consider letting Cox go out on loan? And he said, well, look, it's up to him. You know, at the moment, he's been happily working around the squad, but
it looks like the end of the road for him, though, doesn't it?
The right is on the wall. Unless there's a massive injury crisis. I mean, if you can't get off the bench in a losing effort when it's pretty much a reserve side, you know, your number's up.
Yeah, and he wasn't on the bench this week against Burnley, was he? So, with a lot of injuries.
Yeah, unfortunately so. But just as well, just before we finish the recaps, I'd just like to point out as well, last year we talked about leaders and battling and spirit and things. I think you look at something like a Norwood goal line clearance and just that little extra bit of oomph that's in the team this year. You can say, well, they're getting a little bit of luck, but they're helping to create their own luck. And again, it's just this positive vibe that's going around. I mean, the only times Reading have lost this season have been because they missed a last-minute penalty at Birmingham and conceded a deflected goal and whatnot. And against Derby, when Orlando Sarr has a moment of madness. We've got a tweet that's coming up later on that I'll just read out now, where someone's basically saying, I'm turning up every single game now. It's Matt Castle. He says, I'm going to every game expecting to see a win. The only two other seasons I've had that expectation were 2005-06, and 2011-12. Yep. And as we all know, those were seasons that ended in the Championship. Are you both getting that vibe, or is it a bit too soon?
I'm not sure I thought that in 2011-12. I thought we tended to sneak a few wins that year. 2005-06, yes, I was pretty confident every match. Yeah. But I agree, and that's a good question, because I do think that this team, at the moment, albeit after only a few games, looks stronger than the 2011-12 team.
Mm. Well, that team obviously only got going after Christmas, and like you say, it was a... Mm. they started really not fluking wins, but they were just grinding out wins, and the momentum just carried them. Because I think we were going, I remember when Zingarevich took over, I think we'd lost at home to Hull. I think we were down something like seventh, eighth in the table, yeah. Stiff around the playoffs. I mean, Jason Roberts, who we interviewed last week, they were saying, oh, did you expect to be top two? And he said, no, well, we thought we might get in and around the playoffs. And that sort of run is just incredible. Oh, well, as was the 2005-06 run. Yeah. But
they were never great, were they, when you watched
them? Oh, no. No,
they used to grind out results, didn't they?
They knew how to win games, yeah. But they were never a team that went out and blew teams away. Yeah. A couple of other tweets as well from Jack Killick. He says, I really enjoyed the Everton game, even though we lost. Thought we more than matched them, even with eight players rested. Cooper impressed me. Thought he showed he can definitely step in and do a job this season. Listening to the Burnley game, I was impressed with how we played, although it was very nervy at the end. Nonetheless, a great victory and looking forward to the game against Middlesbrough. And also, just one final talking point from Sam Lomax. He says, did Jonathan Bond do enough against Burnley to prove himself as an adequate Feds replacement? Now, we touched on Ali Al-Habsi's keeping. I think the general consensus was, we're not convinced. What about Jonathan Bond? Because again, he's, like Al-Habsi, he's had a couple of moments of dodginess, both in terms of goals and distribution. But again, he's been part of a team that's winning. And while he didn't have a lot to do against Burnley, what did you make?
Again, he hasn't had a lot to do during the game. I think if you see the goal got cleared off the line, I thought he's flapped at it and missed it. And another day, everyone had been pointing the finger at him. Luckily for him, it got cleared off the line. But he's still a very, very young goalkeeper with not that many games at Championship level. And there's not many goalkeepers that come to the side at his age and play regularly. And it looks like they're going to keep him for the long term. So they're obviously confident he's good enough. But I think only time will tell with him. I think he needs a lot more matches under his belt to gain that experience that a goalkeeper needs.
I think we stick with him. I think you don't want to do a kind of hair trigger thing like Brentford have done today with a manager. I think you want to give a player at least 20-25 games run in the team and like judge him after that. And it would be wrong to decide after 9 games, oh, we don't want him.
Just talking about that Brentford, I think everyone in football was laughing at Brentford this week when they've sacked their manager after sacking a manager who was doing so well.
Farcical.
Absolutely.
It'd be interesting. I know the B-sided chaps are recording their emergency, I think they're calling it their emergency war cabinet tonight for their podcast. That'll be an interesting listen. If you want to get some focus on the Brentford situation, go check out the B-sided lads. Great bunch as well. Good entertaining lot. Check them out. But yeah, I mean, Jonathan Bond, you've got to stick with it. I know, you know, young goalkeepers go through this. I noticed Alex McCarthy found himself on the bench for Crystal Palace again on Sunday, even as they lost. Sorry, they beat Watford 1-0. So it's the sort of growing pains you have to go through. And unfortunately, the market Reading was shopping in, you know, you can't expect to get a well-beaten goalkeeper.
I think luckily for Taylor, he hasn't got a decent goalkeeper behind him, so put too much pressure on
Bond,
that.
You mean?
Bond, yes. No
pressure. Stuart Taylor could come in.
So there's no pressure on Bond at the moment because the keeper that's underneath him is not any better.
Yeah.
There's an interesting article about Stuart Taylor in When Saturday Comes this month and how he's only played, I don't know, about 90 games.
Is this his campaign to get him to like 100 games? I think I've seen this.
Yeah. I think there's a little bit about that, but just how he could have been like a, you know, really good goalie, but has just chosen to be on the bench. And I think that's probably the modern game. You know, it's not only goalkeepers.
Because he went through a phase, I remember at Arsenal, where it was either just after Seaman left, where he got about a run of about 10-15 games, didn't he? And it just never panned out.
But he never managed to nail a first team place down anywhere, did he?
No.
He got 3 years' wages from us for the best part of 4 games.
He made a decent living out of doing nothing. So.
The dream, yeah. It's a dream full of us. Anyway, that just about wraps up our recaps. We'll move on now to just a couple of news bites.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
Well, so we just joked that it is the time of year now with the transfer window closed, that there's not a lot of news. So News Bites is literally a bite.
Yeah, a
small nip. A News Bite single this week. But it is a significant news bite because Reading have completed their purchase of the Bearwood site, the former site of Bearwood Golf Club, for a cost of £4 million. It'll be the site of their new state-of-the-art training ground, which will have 3 full-size pitches, 5 pitches for the academy, and 2 goalkeeping practice areas. I noticed that Johnny in our report said, presumably one will be just set aside for Al-Habsi. So
harsh but fair.
Although maybe it needs to be one of these, you know, the duck tanks you used to get at fairs.
Yeah.
If someone like scores a goal, it dunks them in water. So maybe we need to get something like that for Al-Habsi.
It's a good idea. I mean, it might make him concentrate the whole 90 minutes.
Was it negative reinforcement? Something along those lines.
Like
any time you can see the goal, you're going in the tank. No, but it looks like a fantastic facility. £4 million is no small chunk of change, especially for a championship side. It's going to take about 2 years to build. But at the end of it, I mean, since some of the design drawings and things like that, it looks brilliant. And again, it shows how far Reading have come from training over the road at Elm Park and at Reading Cricket Ground to moving up to a few porter cabins at Bearwood to having this facility.
Yeah, I'd like to personally thank Margaret Hector and Chelsea for their buying this.
Yeah, there you go.
This Bearwood purchase.
Well, if you think it's less than half the cost of Andre Gray, who went to Burnley from Brentford, I mean, it really is such a good investment. And I think the whole setup of the club has been fantastic over the last 15, 20 years. And if you think our traditional rivals, you had the rivalries discussion a few weeks ago, and a lot of the teams who are traditionally seen as rivals are teams like Aldershot and Swindon, and then you could look at other teams a bit further away like Gillingham and Colchester and teams lower down the leagues. You know, we really have like had a real plan for 20 years to build from the grassroots. We haven't spent too much money on transfers, and building this academy and moving to the new training ground is all for the good.
I think what Reading have done is absolutely amazing. I think they're continually trying to get the club forward. It's not stopping. I mean, they had a great training facility anyway, but they're not rested on their laurels. And like I say, £4 million in today's football is not big money, really, is it?
Yeah.
And for that, and it gives the club that feel of a Premier League side, you know, a Premier League club. And players that are going to come to the club and play for us are going to look at this and think, wow, this is amazing.
Exactly.
And it attracts better players, as simple as that.
Not just established players, but younger players as well. You can imagine a parent who's got a child that's being courted by, say, Southampton, maybe, say, Southampton, Chelsea and Reading. Well, at the moment, both Southampton and Chelsea have got arguably much better facilities. But now, with this new training ground in place, when it's built, Reading, you know, is the sort of thing that goes, wow. And adds the fact that Reading can offer a lot more first team opportunities than these other clubs, at least at the moment.
Yeah, again, and there's a progression from young player to squad and to squad to side. And you can see that throughout Reading over the last 10, 15 years. The more money they've spent, the more players that have managed to make their way into the first team. And it's no coincidence. I would say, personally, my son is in the pre-academy at Reading. And the pre-academy is basically for the younger players that they're keeping their eye on. And I mean, when I was a kid, none of this happened. You turned up for a trial and they had one look at you and that was it. But now they keep them, they train them. It doesn't cost the parents a penny and they get top level training. And it can only be a good thing for the club and for the youngsters of Reading to have the opportunity, even if they don't make it at Reading, to have a good coaching and maybe turn up at Maidenhead and Basingstoke and other decent sides around the area.
Yeah,
can't fault any of that. It's fantastic. I said it's a great community facility as well. And I said, and again, it's another little reassuring step from the new owners, because obviously these plans were first mooted under Anton, but again, every time it moves a step closer, every time Reading actually gets something done, it gives you that little bit more faith that these owners are here for long term. They actually know what they're doing. So again, it's a little bit of credit in the Thai group.
And the scouting network as well, just to talk about that. And the scouting network at Reading is huge. I don't think people realise how many scouts there are, especially at youth level.
I thought we only scouted teams we played in cup ties.
Yeah, no, but at the youth level, there are so many scouts now for Reading that will walk around, talk to the parents, you know who they are. And again, I had to talk about my son because he's in the pre-academy, but they watched him four times before they contacted him to say, we want to have a look at you. So it wasn't like a fluke. They do have a good look at the players around the area.
Are we going to put some money on now and him playing for England?
No.
No? You mean position? Yes, obviously. Yeah.
What position does he play?
He's goalkeeper.
Goalkeeper.
Oh, there we go.
Wow, get him in.
Chris Kirkland's dad did that. Made some.
Yeah, money. Let's see if Elhabsy come down.
he's probably number two, number three, isn't he?
Luckily at youth football, it's only an hour of football, not 90 minutes. So as long as he can concentrate for that long, he should be all right.
Right. Well, talking about youthful potential realised or unrealised, that sets us nicely up for this week's pub chat.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.
Westy, what is your favourite type of pie?
Humble.
Is it humble pie?
No, not really. I do like a bit of steak and kidney, I must admit.
If you were a baker right now in the Reading area and you were producing humble pie, dare I say it, you would be doing quite well. Because we ran a poll, and it's just a shame that Johnny Williams isn't here this week, because he was on the one side of this poll.
He would be gloating a bit, I think.
He would be gloating a bit. The poll we ran pre-season was, we ran a debate piece of, did Nick Blackman basically have a future at the club? That was the poll question. 56% of people said Nick Blackman had no future at Reading. 8 goals in, I think, 12 games later. He's leading the Championship goal scoring charts, leading the club's goal scoring charts, has more goals in this one season than in 2.5 seasons combined, and even has a great song as well on the terraces, just to boot. So I'll phrase it, you know, I joke, but is it time for Reading fans to eat humble pie, or should they still keep that thing in the fridge?
It's amazing how quickly things can change in football. Like you said, not so long ago, there's a lot of players saying he had absolutely no future. A lot of people saying he had absolutely no future at a club. I probably said that as well at some point. But it can turn so quickly. I remember Shane Long, I remember saying I'd drive him to a place and get him dropped off.
And a Federici as well.
Federici, yeah. There's been a few down the years that I've said I'd take him there myself personally. But I think you can only judge it at the time you say it. And looking back, it looks ridiculous. But at the time, they probably weren't playing the best.
What do you think, Rob? Do you think that 56% should be feeling pretty sheepish about now? Or do you think that, at least when it was framed in the pre-season, that they had every reason to say that?
Well, I think there's a difference between someone being flat rubbish and someone underperforming. And I think everybody was right to say that Nick Blackman was underperforming. And obviously, I think Steve Clarke said he had a word with him at the end of last season. And he's obviously gone away, had a big think about it, and come back really determined to live up to his ability. But a lot of people on Hobnob and elsewhere were just saying he's flat rubbish. And that clearly was never true. No. I mean, he was always someone who had a lot of ability. And so, yeah, I think it's absolutely time for everybody to start eating a lot of humble pie, even though I'm with you to an extent, Dan, that we still need to see him sustain it over at least half a season or preferably a full season.
Yeah. And this is the piece that will be going up in the morning on the Tarlest End in our View from the Tarlest End column, penned by myself this week. Basically asking his question, should it be time for fans to eat humble pie? I won't summarise the entire argument, but like I said, 77 games, I think he scored 8 goals in 77 games. Now that is
it's a massive turnaround.
It is a diabolical ratio if you think about it for a forward player. Yes, he played out on the wing a bit. Yes, he didn't get every run in the team, but you should still be scoring more goals than that. And to have such a ridiculous turnaround is something I don't think many people saw coming. Now, you can point to the Shane Longs, you can say the Jimmy Kebes, Adam Federici's, but at least those players had shown bursts of form. I don't think Blackman had shown any real significant spell of, no, certainly over 7 or 8 games, maybe over 3 or 4, but over the 7 or 8 games we thought, this guy is destined for big things, he needs to play. I don't think he was banging on any doors.
No, he wasn't banging on any doors, but has it got a lot to do with the fact now that he's in a much better side than he was before, that are creating more chances? Because I think last year, especially the year before that, we said there's no chances being created for anyone to be scoring goals. And like I said, he was in the outer side, he didn't really play, he didn't have a sustained amount of time in the team. And it was never a side that was creating chance after chance. Whereas now, there's more than one or two people to worry about. Whereas before, Mark Podgrebniak stopped Reading playing, you pretty much finished them off. But now, there's so many people to mark and worry about that maybe he's getting that little bit extra time, and obviously his confidence has gone through the roof.
Rob, again, just picking up on what you said before about there is arguably still work to do. What sort of period of time do you need for a player to say, you've justified your transfer fee, you've justified your role on the side, or our confidence? Is it a case of, well, he's already scored 8 goals this season, everyone tuck into that humble pie? If he didn't score another goal for the rest of the season, would it be a case of those people proved wrong, or has he still got work to do?
I think he's still got a little bit of work to do, but I think if he finished the season with another sort of 10 goals on top of the 8 he's got, I think you'd say that's a good season.
That's a great season.
If he finishes the season on 20 goals, if he scores 20 goals in the Championship, all of a sudden he's an £8 million footballer.
Yeah.
Because people that score 20 goals in the Championship go, at his age anyway, are going to go for between 5 and £10 million in today's market.
Mm. It's just the one thing, obviously, to be aware of. And again, it might sound like I'm putting Blackman down, but it's my role to be devil's advocate here, lads. And also, I do put Nick Blackman down.
Yeah.
Like, I can't.
In general.
I will hold my hands up saying that, I've been critical of him in the past and I'm happy to be proved wrong at the moment. But you look at the run like someone like Simon Cox had at this time last year. Now, I think Simon Cox had a run of something like 7 goals in 16 games. Not all too dissimilar from what Blackman's got. And some of his were great as well. And then went completely off a cliff. Hal Robson-Kanu, fantastic end to that Premier League season. Seemed to be scoring every week. And again, drops off. So, for me, again, and I phrased it this way, I think you should be tucking into your humble pie, but keep a couple of slices back in the fridge. Because until, I still want to see him do it, because it's going to be fascinating to see how he recovers if he goes 5 or 6 games without a goal. I hope he doesn't. I hope he keeps banging them in. But it's how you respond to that, because he's had these streaks before at Sheffield United and at Aberdeen where he's got a load of goals and then it's just not worked out for him. So
We'll see. You can only judge it. You can only call it as you see it. And I think that with Blackman especially, he's the sort of player that doesn't need supply at the moment. He looks like he can score from anywhere. As soon as it gets on his left foot, you're thinking, if he hits the target, the keeper's going to struggle to save this. I think he's got more about him than Cox, and I think he's got more about him than Robson Kane. I think most of the time, people get upset with players and have a go at them because they know they've got more than they're giving. And I think Blackman's one of those players when you know he's got more ability than he's shown, and now he's showing it, you just hope he can sustain it. But I think he runs out. His contract must be running out soon, isn't it?
End of the season.
Yeah. So, again, he's in a strong position for negotiating at the moment. So, if I was him, I would get in now.
Absolutely. And that last point is, well, the point before last is most pertinent. It's the players that have that potential to get frustrated. I don't think we'd waste half the airtime or column inches or whatever you want to say on how Robson Kanu if we didn't think and know he's got a hell of a lot in his locker. Yeah. Because you don't sit there and bash Yure Travner last season. You don't sit there and bash
Hoke Akpan's.
No, you don't. Because
you give them, they give what they've got, and yeah, that's all they've got, so that's what you accept. But with Carney, you see him play for Wales, you think, who is this bloke? Because he doesn't play for Reading.
Yeah. Phil Parkinson was never, I'm going to say something sacrilegious here, Phil Parkinson was never the greatest footballer in the world.
No, he never was. No.
But he gave every single drop of ability he had. Yeah. And he was a player that was a perennial, you know, he barely played at championship level for Reading for a couple of seasons. That was about it.
Yeah, well, Mackie's another one. I mean, I said before, Mackie made poor decisions a lot of time and he run when he didn't have to run. But people like the fact that he give all that he had. And that's all you can ask. And I think of the players that you do have a go at, your Blackmans, your Carnies, sometimes you look at them and think, you're not giving all you've got. And when they are, great. But when they're not, they're entitled to be criticised, I'm saying.
It's quite gratifying, actually, to see that Jamie Mackie's only been on the bench for QPR.
He had some bad injury news today. He's out for 8 to 12 weeks.
Oh, that's a shame to hear.
Yeah, he came off the bench and got injured, didn't he?
Yeah, it's a real shame. It's just such a stop-start career because, you know, he had that good little run in the Premier League with QPR and obviously does well at Reading and does okay at Forest. And it's just a perennial sort of nearly man, I think.
I think he's at his level. The Championship's probably about as high as he should have gone.
The one other thing I'll say about Blackman as well, just before we move on, is that in terms of the humble pie, I don't think he necessarily endeared himself to Reading fan base with some of his behaviour and comments and things. I don't think saying I've got nothing to prove in pre-seasons necessarily the right way to go about it. You might believe that, but do you really want to say that in public? I mean, it's great you've got that confidence, but and doing things, I don't know if you remember when he scored at Derby. Selling it. Just little things like that. It's been a very rocky road, but and again, in this piece I'll point out a lot of players have that moment or that game when it just clicks with a fan base. And I think for Nick Blackman, that Brentford game, you have the perfect conditions. You've got a terrace packed for the Reading fans, happy to sing and get involved. You get a good performance at a localish rival, and he scores two goals. Gets a song going for him, scores two goals. And I think it just takes like that. I mean, you remember Kebe's goal in the first minute against West Brom, or Dave Kitson scoring those two goals against West Ham. There can be that moment when it just all just clicks into place. And for me, I think that game was Brentford.
Yeah, and it buys you time, doesn't it? Mm. You could have a few poor performances now. I think people think, wow, he's been banging the goals in the door. So it definitely buys you time. And I think he's the sort of player that needs that affection. He needs the fans to get behind him because he's that sort of confidence player. He does tend to sulk if it's not going so well. Yeah.
I think one thing we should say, though, is that he's probably got to continue playing really well because if he doesn't, we've got Vidra and Saar.
Yeah. It's another thing I pointed to earlier in the season. If you've got competition for your place, if you want to play football, then you're going to have to play well. And whereas last year, they didn't have anyone that was going to come in and take their place. Yeah. So he really cared.
Yeah. Well, I think it's safe to say, Nick, that as soon as this podcast wraps up, I will be tucking into a couple of slices. Happily, might I add. No matter what you say, and I like to think this of every fan, if you've ever criticised a player, at the end of the day, if they start doing well, it's a win-win situation.
Yeah.
I will tuck in with a smile on my face.
But I will say this. There's been players in the past, and I think Jimmy Kebe was one of them, that it didn't matter how well they played, there were people that were quite quick to point out their every mistake.
Yeah.
It wouldn't matter if he beat four players and booted in the top corner. If in the next 2 seconds he's missed, passed it and it's gone to a player, there'd be the same people jumping up saying, there you go, I told you so.
Yeah. Constructive criticism is one thing. Just don't get on a player's back for no reason. And you know who you are.
Yeah, you know who you are. And also, have you ever stuck with a player knowing that he's not playing well, but you think, I'm going to back him even though nobody else is?
I have, yeah. Carlos Arba was my main one. And really didn't do well for Reading, let's face it. Big money signing at the time. And But I liked him. I don't know, I'd advocated his signing because I've got friends who support Brentford and we'd signed him from Brentford, I think.
Yeah.
And you know, I just, through thick and thin, I supported him. And I, at one point, I had a shouting match on the south bank with another bloke who was like, I'm getting on his back, and I was defending him. I mean, the other guy was probably right, ultimately, but I just really wanted to get behind him. I just thought it wasn't serving any purpose at all.
He's got about, I don't think he had the worst, I think he's got about 12 goals.
I'll tell you what, he was a player that couldn't head a ball, but he's, I see him score a brilliant header at Elm Park. Mm. I mean, a brilliant one. But Carlos Alba was another player. He was quick. He had all the attributes to a really good footballer. It just never really happened for him. I think my player was Matijovski. I said,
oh, yeah.
I absolutely love him. And my excuse was, the other players weren't as good as him.
Not on his
way. He's on a different wavelength, yeah.
Again, better. I'd love to have him in this sort of team.
Oh, he'd be brilliant. I'm still sticking by him now.
Carlos Alba is that ultimate frustrating player, though, that did brilliantly pretty much everywhere but Reading. Because I think he went to Gillingham.
We see him at Gillingham and put us to the sword in a game once. I was there at Priestfield.
Those players are just unfortunately just don't click at Reading. I can't think of players that I've religiously backed. I'm obviously I don't have faith in anyone. I always had a soft spot for Lee Nogan.
Yeah, but he got hideously booed at the start of his career.
He did. Yeah, I remember saying to my Brendan, a 2-0 defeat at Millwall once. Early on in Lee Nogan's Reading career, I described him as having no discernible attributes. And he always throws that back at me when he went on that streak of a run and at Wembley.
My dad always jokes that he was worth 50p. And I always used to say, well, he's earned that 50p this year. He's only about 10 at the time.
There was one player I used to comically back just because I knew it upset all the people around me. And my dad's mates, obviously I was a bit younger then, but my dad's mates used to stand around and they used to hate Michael Meeker. They used to slate him. Right? But every time we got the ball and he went past someone, I used to go, there you go, look how good he is. Until my dad's mate got so angry with me because I thought I was telling the truth here, but I was just trying to wind him up and it worked perfectly. But Michael Meeker was dreadful, but I used to pretend I liked him just because it upset everyone else.
Yeah. I think there's a few players that get that go on the opposite. They get the back in like they never deserved in the first. Like people like Royce and Drenta, Danny Guthrie, you know, players that do those couple of flash moments in the game, and everybody loves them. It's not they're on the wrong wavelength. They're just
Massar. It's another one.
Trick
Massar.
Yeah. Anyway, plenty of names. And if you've got any suggestions of players that you've stuck with through the bad times that have come good, or players that you've backed far too much, let us know at thetarlehurstend@gmail.com or on Twitter @thetarlehurstend or on facebook.com/thetarlehurstend. I sense an article idea coming, Westy, for future weeks.
Could be a little sort of rose-tinted glasses type article.
Yeah, we could do a hell 11 and a heaven 11.
Yeah.
Something like that. Anyway, I'll take that to the editorial team.
I'll think about that.
Meanwhile, let's move on to some of your thoughts in the mailbag.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
@thetarlehurstend
and facebook.com/thetarlehurstend.
So as usual, a big thanks to everyone who's got in touch. You heard the contact details there, so I won't bother repeating them again, but it genuinely is very much appreciated to those who get in touch with the show. You hear it in the stings all the time, but it's by the fans, for the fans. And literally, if you guys weren't sending us in feedback, we'd probably give up after a little while. Probably get a bit bored of ourselves.
If you weren't backing us with rose-tinted glasses, then...
Yeah. If you've backed this podcast through all the bad times, please stick with us, because...
Well,
might
I was presenting it.
Yeah. We're still an unprofessional joke of a podcast, but we endeavour to be the best unprofessional joke of a podcast. And also, just a quick thank you while I remember to all of those who nominated us for a Football Blogging Award. We'll find out who the nominees are next week, but I don't think it's very likely we're going to get a nod for the public voting, because unfortunately... It's a massive numbers. But these things do go to judges, so we definitely won't get through that. They're rigorous standards. But no, if you did take the time, a massive thank you there. Right, getting on to your tweets then. We start with Stuart. And talking of contracts, he says, should we be offering Harry Robson-Kanu a new deal to get sale value, or let his contract expire and get him off the books? And speaking of Robson-Kanu, I'll just read Ollie's tweet as well. Ollie Frost says, do you think Hal Robson-Kanu could use the Burnley game to put together a similar vein of form as Nick Blackman? And Laura Royal as well. Lovely pass by Hal Robson-Kanu for the first. Reverse inside step or something? Or should we call it the Hal pass? So a lot of love this week for Hal Robson-Kanu. Gents, obviously some very different questions. The first, obviously, do you think this could spark? Because Orlando Sarr is back on Saturday. And possibly, we don't know, but Matej Vidra as well. Does Robson-Kanu keep his place against Middlesbrough to start with?
again, it's a tricky one. After you come off the back of a win away to Burnley, it'd be a shame, I think, for anyone to get dropped. And I don't know if it sends the right message to them that, okay, it doesn't matter how I play, I'm going to get dropped when these players come back. I think it's difficult for the manager to drop them when they're winning. I know they're playing Middlesbrough, I know it's a big game. But to drop them, it says, well, it doesn't really matter you play well this week because the stars are back, and I don't think he will drop them.
Could you see this starting a similar run of form for Hal as it is for Nick Blackman?
I'm not convinced it would, to be honest. I saw the player ratings on the website, and I think whoever wrote them wasn't 100% convinced by his performance overall. Personally, I think Sarr's the kind of player who might get a bit upset if he's left out for no reason. And I know that a good reason is getting sent off. Yeah. Missing three games, but I'd be tempted to just put Sarr back in. I think we have to back Sarr as our main striker this season in terms of goals, even though Blackman's outscoring him at the moment. And I think in terms of the new contract thing, I think, no, you wait until later in the season. And a lot of the debate will be how long the contract is. And obviously you don't offer him 3-4 years, but 2 years might not be enough for him. So that's the conundrum.
Yeah, and it's a dangerous game for the club as well, because obviously you can leave it and wait and see. But if he scores, you know, if he does get a running team, scores 4 goals in the next 6 games, suddenly that price shoots up. Whereas, you know, do you say, well, I don't think he's going to do that well, I'll wait, and his value will go down, he'll sign a lesser deal?
How old is Robson Kanu nowadays?
I believe he's 26 or 27. Okay, I will look that up.
Yeah, sounds about right. So he's still sort of in his prime, really.
Yeah.
Again, Robson Kanu, he's one of those players that just annoy me most of the time. I sit and watch him and think, I know you can do it, and you don't. And again, he always seems to have a spell.
Yeah, he's 26. He turns 27 next month.
Yeah, so he's still a good age. And again, I think Robson Kanu would be happy to let his contract run down, because he'll end up having a pick of sides, I thought, because there'll be a lot of championship sides, especially, that will come in for him on a free
kick. Here's a question for you, Rob, off the top of your head. In a perception case, how many goals do you think Hal Robson Kanu has scored in his Reading career?
I think I would guess probably about 22, 23.
Westy?
It's probably, he must have, I know he scored 7, so I reckon he must have scored 30, I'll go 30.
Very, very close, Rob. He scored 21, according to the Oracle that is Wikipedia, he scored 21 goals in 173 games.
See, it's not good, is it, for an attacking player?
It's about 1 in 8, 1 in 9?
I would say, I think the bulk of his games, probably his best games actually, have been on the wing. I think particularly, I remember the Manchester United game in the Premier League season where we lost 4-3 and he played really well that day. And so I don't know. I mean, I think, yeah, Westy's right. It's not a fantastic ratio, but I mean, his position hasn't been certain.
No, that is very true.
No, yeah. But he's still, even if he was playing on the wing, you'd expect to score more goals than that in that amount of games, wouldn't you? And I think the bulk of his goals probably come in the Premier League, which is ironic.
Yeah, I think he got 6-7 in that season. Yeah. But it's just a weird one. It's just the fact he's racked up nearly 200 games. Yeah. I know he's our longest serving player by a fair distance at the moment.
Without making much of a mark.
He got 7 goals in that Premier League season. That was his highest mark.
7 out of 21 in the top league. Looks like he scores goals in the Premier League and struggles everywhere else.
And that's why he got a massive contract from Uncle Anton.
Yeah.
So, right, moving on. Because we have not had enough Hal Robson Kanu. We've got to get maybe we should have a section. Hal Robson Kanu bites.
Yeah, so, maybe.
Each week.
It's certainly something to talk about when it comes to Hal Robson Kanu.
Tim Redmayne, if the league finished now, do you reckon we would get through a Burnley semi in 2 legs and then a Hull or Cardiff final?
Yes, yes and yes.
Yes, I think we would, but it is a very hypothetical question.
Can I just double check that the two of you are backing Reading to win a playoff final?
Yep.
Wow.
Yes, I think we would. Current circumstances and form, but a lot will change between now and the end of the season.
I can't handle another playoff final. It's been too
many. Nice to have a winning playoff final, wasn't it?
Was it? How many did Preston have to go through before they won? Was it 9?
I think it was a 10th that was successful. Yeah.
And we've had five campaigns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
3 finals and 2 semis.
It sounds about right. Yeah. It's, unfortunately, we've not gone all the way, but it's a great way to get promoted. But it's a bit nervy.
I wouldn't know. What would I say? I would cautiously have to say yes, but I'd also say no because it's the playoffs. Jem Kurakan, any chant ideas for new players or academy graduates? We've had a couple of good, you know, I moaned on this podcast a few weeks ago that there wasn't enough good Reading songs, and we've had the Nick Blackman song and the Orlando Sarr song in recent weeks, so credit to the fans, because they've actually come up with a couple of decent efforts.
It's about time as well.
It is, yeah.
Instead of churning out the same old ones with different names on it.
Any players, can you think of a song for Tish Bowler?
Not a lot rhymes with that.
What about Novakovic?
Even harder.
I think with the modern technology, you might want to run a competition where you get people to like record their chants and send them into the website.
It sounds like a good idea. It sounds like saying that we'd earn a mug.
Definitely.
Yeah.
We'd earn a mug. Mugs for mugs. No, I'm going to leave that up to you, Jem. I noticed he played his first game, speaking of Jem Courage, the actual Jem Carrichan, he played his first game for Galatasaray apparently this week. Yeah. First league game anyway. Dave McCormack, the regular writer and contributor to the website and this podcast, says, if we beat Borough, or at least get a draw, is this the acid test for the squad? And if they win, can we think about promotion? I think yes.
I think, yeah, it's early days, obviously, but I haven't seen anything that needs to frighten Reading. And I think a lot of teams now are going to stand up and take notice of them, because they, especially away from them, they're getting great results. Our home form is still patchy, though, and that's certainly sorting out before we can even say we're going to be promoted.
Yeah, I mean, I think a few years ago, a bit later in the season than this, we took on Portsmouth, who were comfortably the best team in the league, in a game at the Mad Stad, and drew 0-0, and I came away with it from it thinking, oh, that was a really good performance. We matched them toe-to-toe, and I was happy with that. But good as I think Middlesbrough are, and they've got a great squad, I'd actually be disappointed with anything less than a win on Saturday. I think we've got to be looking to win.
Yeah, I think with Reading, looking at our home form down the years, we still haven't proved that we can break down a side that's sitting against us. Whereas Agreed. Away from home, last year, away from home, because we've got the players we have at the moment, away from home, teams have to come at Reading, so we've been picking them off. But this year, especially at home, teams have been sitting in against us. I think that have become more and more present, because teams know now that we're a good side. They're going to sit in, and that's when I want to see Reading break a team down and beat them. And that hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, you know, I think the Ipswich game is the only game we've won at home in something like 7 or 8.
Yeah, so. And Ipswich come and attacked us, and that's probably why we picked them off. Yeah. But a lot of teams won't. I think MK Dons sat in, I mean, Derby sat in for large periods of the game, and we never looked like breaking them down, really. So that's what I want to see happen.
And yeah, this is a massive acid test, but the Championship is littered with sides that get off to hot starts and fall apart. I mean, Reading 2 years ago, and Nigel Adkins got to a better start than this.
Yeah.
And I know they weren't playing as good football, but you know, you can't sit there and say, well, we've beaten the contenders or supposed contenders at the moment, we're going to be all right. So
I think in general, Reading have got more chance of beating a side at home like Middlesbrough than they will have one of the teams lower down the league.
Mm.
Because Middlesbrough will come and think, actually, we can get a result here, where a lot of us think, let's sit in and see what happens.
Yeah, been an interesting one. But anyway, we'll come on to that game in just a second when we preview it in Any Other Business.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Any Other Business.
You learn some fascinating things here on the Tarlhurst End Podcast, and as a Daddy Longlegs buzzes around the microphone, Westies informs me they live for one day.
Yeah, and their whole purpose is to find a mate, so don't kill it, give it a chance.
I will try and give this one a chance, though, but it keeps bumbling into the microphone. I might have to take evasive measures. Like, they creep me out. They really, really creep me out, Daddy Longlegs. Anyway, enough of the creepy crawly talk. Let's get on to Middlesbrough. And I'll start this team-wise before we move on to anything. We were talking about keeping settled sides and whatnot. Let's put our cards on the table then. You know, George says, Orlando Sarr, to recall or not to recall? Now, first of all, we've got to assume he's fit. He's served his 3-match ban. There's been no talk of him being injured. So, gentlemen, do you change that side, yes or no?
I think you said that you would.
Yeah, I think so. I think I'd bring Sarr back in. I think Vidra, I think rarely do players become injured for any one match, and I think Vidra, I don't think they'll risk him if there is any doubt at all. But I think with Sarr, yeah, I would put him back in. I think he's the talisman now, and I think that hat-trick against Ipswich was just so good that I'd be very, very, very inclined to put him back in.
Just the one change, Sarr in for, say, Robson Kanu?
That's a good question, because he might want to look at who the opposition have and decide to do something with the midfield. I kind of felt that Danny Williams might have played in the game against Burnley because it was like a tough away game and he wanted someone to be combative and getting in there and getting the tackles in. And it might have been a different midfield if we'd been at home to Rotherham, say. So,
yeah.
And equally Middlesbrough, I mean, you're at home, so you've got to be attacking. But at the same time, you know, there's some pretty decent players there. So, you know, they've got Grant Ledbetter and Adam Clayton in midfield, which is like pretty strong midfield. So how you go up against that, I don't know. I think that's a good question.
I think you might throw Tish Bowler back in.
He may. Again, we spoke about it earlier that it'd be disappointing for anyone to come out of that side on Saturday's performance. But I think, like you, that he probably will put Saar back in the side. And with Saar, you've got someone who's a target and you could play off. Whereas probably Kanu and Blackman are similar sort of players. I think he might think, I'll tell you what, I'd put Saar on and then we'll see how it goes. And if later on in the game you've got to put Robson Kanu on, he might well do that. But yeah, I don't think I'd be disappointed whatever the team is on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, we talked in pre-season West Ham. I remember we were going through the squads at the start of the campaign, and I think we picked out Derby and Middlesbrough as the two teams to watch. And you just have to look at the team that demolished Leeds 3-0, albeit with the help of one of the great own goals that you'll see this season. Have you seen it?
No,
from the Leeds lad? Guy crosses it in, defender under absolutely no pressure around the six-yard box, bullet headers it in from 6 yards.
Yeah.
One of those things where you'd be dead proud if you were a striker.
Unfortunately,
it's Leeds.
Good wingers. They've got good wingers as well, Middlesbrough.
Yeah, I mean, look, the names, you know, you've got the likes of Kalas and Ayala, you know, play for Premier League clubs. Konstantopoulos, decent goalkeeper. Dave Nugent, who obviously led Leicester to promotion not so long ago. Stuart Downing, who was playing for England this time last year. Clayton, again, you mentioned, I thought he's one of the, I think he really stood out when he came there with Huddersfield a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. And I was gutted Reading missed out. Although I think we ended up with Norwood as a result, so it didn't do too bad in the end. And even the bench, people like Forshaw, I think Kike scored against us. In fact, did Kike score a couple against us last year? Am I misremembering?
I think it might have been just the year before. I'm not sure, because we stole did he score a hat trick against them last year. We won away.
We did, you're right. Was it 2 years ago did he maybe score a hat trick? I might be completely at the wrong sheet. But anyway, whatever the case, it's a packed squad and it's one of the best in the Championship.
Yeah, and they've got a lot of steady players mixed with some skillful, quick players, which is pretty much what we got, so we're a decent contest.
I think the interesting one is Christian Stuani, the Uruguayan, who I've heard a lot of good things about, and a lot of South American football commentators, I think, expressed surprise that he chose to join a Championship club rather than a Premier League team, and he has had a very good start as well, so I think he's quite combative as well, so I think he's going to be tough to stop, I think.
Yeah, and these would be there or thereabouts when it moves at the end of the season, I'll have thought.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm. Yeah, and like the previous contributor said, it is an acid test. You know, this is one of the best sides of the Championship. We've already had one of those against Derby, and whether you blame Saar or not, we didn't really pass it. But then you go up and beat Burnley, who are a team that came into that game off the back of 4 wins in 5 and I think 6 defeats in 50-odd Championship games, and they go and do it fairly comfortably. Yeah. So it's not the be-all and end-all. If we win, great. Another step. Another 3 points chalked off. If we lose, it's not the end of the world. It's early days. So,
but we still need to turn our own form around. Mm. We've still got to get in 3 points at home regularly.
But the best thing is that it's a big game to look forward to at Medeski. It's got that already. It's got that cup-tie feeling. It's got that feeling of, do you remember when we played Sheffield United early doors in that 2005-06 season? And I think we were actually behind. Were we behind Sheffield United at the time? Were we just nudging in front of them and we beat them? Gunnarsson scored a couple. It's got that big early season feel already.
And it also made it onto the Sky Super 6 this week.
Hello.
Yeah, so you know you must have made it when that happens.
Gamble away.
Yeah, gamble away.
Speaking of which, Rob, we're going to start with you because unfortunately you're not in our prediction league, but you're an honorary member.
Guest.
You are a guest member. How do you see this one going?
I think it'll be a draw. I think 1-1, a really, really good, entertaining 1-1 draw.
Okay. Yeah. Well, into the actual prediction league itself, and another good reason Johnny Williams isn't here is because he'd be crowing at the moment of his correct prediction. Johnny in the managed to get the Burnley score right. He predicted a 2-1 win, which took him up to 9 points for the season. Also doing well, Charles Watts, he's on 8. I'm on 6, and Alan West is on 1 point. Not going well for you.
It's not going well.
But there's all to play for.
It's not over yet.
They've got another couple of rounds.
I could turn this form around, Nick Blackman style.
We might have to do it Formula One style, where the last game is worth like 5 times as many.
Yeah.
But okay, then, Westy, I'll give you the chance to stake your claim early. How do you see this one going?
We're
going
to win. I think we're going to win 3-1.
Okay. That's usually Johnny's call. I'm going to be much more conservative. I'm going to go along the same lines as Rob. And I'm just going to go for a cheeky 1-1. Basically, me being negative against Reading has worked this season. So I'm going to keep it. I'm going to sacrifice my prediction league for the good of the team.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Or we'll get Johnny's prediction a little later in the week, and obviously I'll speak to Charles on Friday. But that just about wraps up the show, really. I mean, we've only got the Middlesbrough game, and then for once it's not a midweek, and in fact we've got 2 weeks off.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Internationals. So we wouldn't go on Johnny Holidays.
Yeah.
If we had any money left.
Yeah, if we had any money left, I don't know.
No, I need to sell a few mugs before we go away again. just closing thought then before we go. Championship in general, is it shaped up the way you thought? Obviously we're still talking very early days, but Brighton, Middlesbrough, Reading, Burnley all around the top six, Hull as well.
Yeah, I think it's amazing that Brighton and Reading, really, that they've had such a poor season before and all of a sudden they're back at the top of the league. I think the Championship's always an amazing league. I think it's a great league because from 1 week to the next, you never know what's going to happen, really. The only thing that's disappointing me a little bit is the teams that have come up this year. They seem to be really, really struggling. And I thought Bristol City would do pretty well this year.
Yeah, bottom.
Yeah, they're bottom. And again, I think maybe it's starting to show that the divide, a bit like the Championship sides going to the Premier League, it's starting to happen in the Championship because of the fallout of the money that comes, obviously, from
the
league.
They're all down, aren't they?
Bottom three. Yeah, I've been surprised, like West have been very surprised by Brighton, but I think the signing, the Israeli signing, is at Hemed, has done quite well. And that's one of those gamble of a signings that it can work or it can't. But I don't expect them to last the pace. So they could well be in the playoffs, but I don't expect them to be top two.
No.
And for the bottom three, I think there's a couple of managers in there in Simon Grayson and
Carl Robinson,
and certainly Steve Cotterill, who maybe, you know, they've got a lot to learn at the high level. Grayson's teams have never done that well in the Championship. You know, he's always been very good at getting teams out of the third tier. And I just don't think there's any space at the moment to kind of play the long ball. I think you've got to kind of play pretty decent football in this league.
Now, yeah. Steve Evans walked away from Rotherham today as well. And we mentioned the Brentford manager getting the axe as well. It's frightening how early teams are prepared. I mean, Evans, only obviously the full circumstance of his departure, we don't know them yet. But, you know, he led them to the great escape after a couple of promotions. So for him to leave...
Yeah, it's harsh, I think, especially clubs like that. Because if you look at the teams at the top, they've got huge budgets for this league. Huge budgets. I mean, when you've got people buying players for $9 million in the Championship, you're going to struggle to come from the league below and step up to that level. It's too difficult now. And it's starting to be like the Championship teams going into the Premier League. The divide between League One and the Championship is beginning to look massive.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, the Steve Evans one has surprised me because they had that great win at Birmingham on Saturday.
Won the last two.
What can Rotherham reasonably expect? But it looks like it might. We don't know the story, as you said.
So, I don't think it's a straight sack. I think there's something else in there.
Yeah.
So we'll have to see how that one pans out.
I mean, teams like Rotherham, I mean, if they've got a decent player in their ranks, they're going to get bought and they're going to sell them.
Yeah.
So they're always going to be struggling to stay in a division.
Mm. Yeah, we'll have to see how that pans out. But I said that just about wraps up the show. I'll be back with Charles on Friday. Thank you to Johnny for stepping in for me last Friday. I hope you all enjoy that podcast extra. If you didn't enjoy it, please direct all your complaints to Jonathan on Twitter. But yeah, I'll hopefully be back to talk with Charles and he can crow about his own prediction league victories. But Rob, thanks very much for taking the time to join us.
Anything
we can look forward to on the Two Unfortunates over the next few weeks and months?
After a quiet period, we've got a series a couple of weeks looking at football in various cities. So just the footballing landscape, and I'm doing a post on London, well, hopefully, if I can get it written, and on others like Manchester and Brighton and Bristol, and then actually a couple of foreign cities, including New York, where there are now three professional teams. So look out for that. That's going to start as of next week, I think, October the 5th, and run for probably the best part of the 2 weeks. Not a post every day, but should be really good.
Excellent. Westy, anything you got in the works?
No, not really.
We're off down the bookies now to back on your boys play for England.
Okay, let's do that.
Gamble away. Yeah. Anyway, that does wrap up the show. Again, a big thanks to Rob and Westy for joining me. We'll be back to recap the Middlesbrough game before taking a couple of week breaks, so stay tuned for that next week. In the meantime, keep your eyes posted and peeled on thetilesn.com. I said we'll have that Nick Blackman piece up tomorrow as we record this on the Monday night, and also we'll have lots of other features, hints and tips. Bookie Watch will be up at some point. The final gamble aware reference of the day.
I wouldn't follow my gamble but my predictions anyhow.
Did you put money on Jake Cooper to score against Everton?
No. But what I've been doing every week.
Oh, is it McShane? Yeah, your new defender. McShane.
And I looked at his goal record recently and I'm thinking this was more of a gamble than I thought it was going to be.
Indeed. All right, well, let's hope Reading win the league and Johnny can bail us all out. Anyway, that is us done. In the meantime, let's hope for 3 points against Middlesbrough. And come on, you arse. It's funny how the crowds always leave a trail.
Tarlhurst End podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.